Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The 7th Brick Jazz Fest Brooklyn 2021 is go. It's happening tonight, October 21st through October 23rd. Performers include vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Savant, the Sun Ra Orchestra, and vocalist Kurt Elling's Super Blue, featuring guitarist Charlie Hunter. For more information, brickartsmedia.org/jazzfest. EdgeFest 2021 is back, celebrating 25 years of avant-garde jazz and creative new music, Thursday through Saturday, October 28th through the 30th, at the Kerrytown Concert Hall in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Some of the scheduled performers: vocalist Faye Victor's Sound Noise Funk, pianists Angelica Sanchez and Matthew Shipp, and trombonist Steve Swell's If Trains Could Speak. For more information, kerrytownconcerthouse.com/edgefest. The Grammy-nominated vocal group Sage, Sarah Kazarek, Amanda Taylor, John A. Kendrick, and Erin Bentledge, have been awarded the 2021 South Arts Jazz Road Creative Residencies Grant. From October 17th through the 28th, they'll produce, record, and edit their arrangements for their debut release. It'll feature original compositions as well as covers, and include guests drummer Terry Lynn Carrington and keyboardist Jacob Collier. For more information, sagevoices.com or southarts.org. From the Brass Digest newsletter, trumpeter Skylar Flo has uploaded a YouTube video of a selection from his new debut release, Abstractions, on Next Level Records. The piece is titled Opinionated Is Putting It Lightly. The documentary film We Knew What We Had, The Greatest Jazz Story Never Told, explores the social conditions and historical events that made Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, one of the leading contributors to the legacy of jazz music in the world. The film includes live performances and commentary by guitarist George Benson, saxophonist Stanley Turrentine, drummer Art Blakey, and pianist Mary Lou Williams. It's available through MCG Jazz. For more information, mcgjazz.org. Tonight, October 21st, pianist Pete Malaverney and baritone saxophonist Gary Smulian perform at Jazz Dock at Senate Garage in Kingston, New York. The performance begins at 7:30 p.m. For more information, jazzdock.com. This Friday and Saturday night, October 22nd and 23rd, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Alexis Cole Trio performs two sets. And on Sunday, October 24th, Brazilian Sunday with percussionist Vundele Pereira for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. Trumpeter Brian Lynch and his All-Star Quintet perform tomorrow night, October 22nd, at Deerhead Inn in Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. For more information, deerheadinn.com. They'll also be at Small's Jazz Club in New York City on Saturday, October 23rd. For more information, smallslive.com. The Gateways Inn in Lenox, Massachusetts, has been presenting jazz Thursdays through Saturdays this month. On Sunday, October 24th, presented in association with Berkshire's Jazz Incorporated, there'll be a special concert, Rhapsody in Gershwin with the Ted Rosenthal Trio. For more information, gatewayin.com. Drummer Chez Smith celebrates his Path of Seven Colors record release at Roulette in Brooklyn, New York on Tuesday, October 26. The 8 p.m. live performance will also be live streamed. For more information, roulette.org/event. And now for new releases that are out now. Pianist Victor Gould's In Our Time on Blue Room Music. Guitarist Juan Matrujillo's Impectu on Falcon Goomba. Keyboardist Scott Kinsey and vocalist Mir Sal's Adjustments on Blue Canoe. And pianist and composer Alex Brown's The Darkfire Sessions on Alex Brown Music. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. All right, so you want to give it a go, see what happens?
Yes.
Okay. My guests today are soprano saxophonist and educator Jane Ira Bloom and drummer Allison Miller. Their release, recorded on five Tuesdays throughout March and April of this year and performed remotely from their home studios in New York City, came out last month and is titled Tuesdays on Bloom's Outline label. So thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Hi.
Hi. Good to be here.
I'm one of those people who became inspired during the pandemic to try something different. That something being the show Situation Fluxus. For me, conducting interviews and programming music is nothing new, but this format of both is. As seasoned performers and composers, what was different with this release that was inspired by the pandemic? And who, whichever one of you wants to go first.
Go ahead, Allison. You start. Okay.
Well, I will say one thing that was different about this release and a couple other projects that I did, although this one is the one that I did as a collective with Jane, is that I recorded my own drums. So, and I never would have taught myself how to record my own drums if it weren't for the pandemic. And it's been a really enlightening process. I have more respect for recording engineers now. And I also learned how to trust my ears more than I think I'd ever trusted. Got to know my instrument better in the last year and a half. I mean, I think for many of us musicians who were primarily making our living touring, we had to really adjust. And one of those adjustments for me was actually learning how to make a living at home. And so that's why I learned how to record myself. And also just spending more time on my instrument, my actual instrument, not rentals on the road. So I got to really spend valuable time with this instrument that I've actually been playing since I was, my drum set that is on the record, I've been playing since I was, I think, 10. And I had really, it was my teacher's drum set that he left to me when he passed. And I had really kind of veered far away from it for many years, just because I toured all the time. And from being home during the pandemic, I was able to kind of reform my intimate relationship with those drums. And now they feel like part of me. And also just practicing. That was another amazing thing that happened during the pandemic. I actually practiced. I never had time to practice before. So that was really great. And I think my approach to this record, you know, there's a sense of absolute freedom for me when I play with Jane. The way in which Jane phrases the space that she leaves, the melodic content that she so beautifully lays out, really. And also just the format of duo, saxophone, drums, duo. It's like this just wide open world. And as I've said before, when I was playing with Jane, I just felt like I wasn't in control at all. Like, in fact, I loved not being in control. And it was like I was completely in the moment and my hands were moving without me even realizing what was happening. And that was such a cathartic, beautiful feeling to experience.
Well, that's a lot. Geez, lucky for me, you playing your drums was great for me, let me tell you. From my point of view, Cheryl, the biggest thing that was different about this project, I have never made an album where I simply just no compositions prepare and we just play, we just improvise them. We weren't even trying to make an album. We were just playing. And I've never made an album like that before. And I don't think I've ever trusted my improvisational stuff to just say, well, that's worthy of making an album. Normally, as many artists, I'm a composer. I get ready, have compositions that I rehearse with the ensemble. You go into the studio, you rehearse. There's a whole different process to that kind of recording. This came about because Allison and I did a virtual Zoom concert together, just duo, and it just felt so good that we said, we got to do some more of this. We got to play. And so this idea came about organically. It wasn't like we were trying to make an album. It's because we just felt some really important connect that was almost hyper connecting because of the, I think because of the pandemic. It's almost like attenuated, heightened listening was going on, I think. So that's it.
So you didn't start out to make an album, but you did. And right now you're doing press, you're doing interviews, maybe social media, asking friends and relatives to check it out. Now what? Internally, what are you expecting from listeners, your colleagues, and each other?
That's a big question.
It sure is.
What's next?
Yeah.
I hope Allison and I are going to play live. We
Yeah.
are so looking
Yeah.
forward to that. That would be marvelous. And to do just what we did remotely, but do it in front of an audience in a space together, physically, with eye
Yeah.
contact and the physicalness of our sounds and our playing. I sure hope that's in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the only missing element in our collaboration is the audience, you know? And I think that's one thing that every musician deeply realized during the pandemic is that none of what we do makes any sense if we don't have an audience, you know? It's really they're the third member of the band, the audience, and it's so important, you know. For me, I think I was raised very religious, and I'm no longer affiliated with one denomination, but I do miss that sense of congregation that I grew up with. And I think that's one of the reasons I love to play live music more than anything, is because of it gives me that sense of congregation and community that I felt as a kid that I don't actively pursue on Sunday mornings anymore. So, yeah, it's so important. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how you feel about this, Jane, but for me, when we weren't even, I mean, I guess we weren't intending on making a record, so that is totally new. But normally, by the time I put a record out, I'm so ready for the next phase, because I'm normally I spend all this time writing the music, rehearsing the music. You record it, then you spend endless hours mixing. And by the time the record comes out, I'm so over the music. I just want to hit the road. I want people to hear the music, but I also then want to just hit the road and start playing the new music I've written, you know? So I don't exactly ever have any huge expectations when I put a record out. I try to just think of it as an oral documentation of a current phase of my life. And I hope that I can just be fortunate enough and grateful enough to continue to tour my bands and make new music and be inspired by that music we made and hopefully touch some people with it. But I'm always kind of in pursuit of the next thing. And I think a lot of improvisatory musicians are like that. We're constantly in pursuit of the next thing.
A restless little soul that you are.
Oh, I so wish I wasn't, Cheryl. Life would be easier.
Jane, I had interviewed you and bassist Mark Helias in February about your release, Some Kind of Tomorrow. You both played in real time in different locations and made it happen. I'm guessing he's involved in this release because of the process of making Some Kind of Tomorrow. How was his inclusion necessary and or helpful?
Absolutely. It was from that experience that I learned how to do it. You know, Mark engineered it, but, you know, we learned how to do this kind of remote playing with this very little bit of, no latency, no delay. And that's what I showed and I brought to Allison. And then we, when we had gotten enough tracks down, it just made complete sense to run it by Mark as an engineer who, remember, he's a bassist and an engineer. So his keen ear for the back line, for the drum bass, for how the drums function, and his familiarity with my sound made it just a natural. So if you hear any simpatico in the sound between Some Kind of Tomorrow and this album with Allison, you can look toward Mark's ear and the sensitivity that he had to what we were up to, both musically and sonically. Allison is not just playing the drum set, she's playing a whole array of percussion that it requires great sensitivity to bring that to the fore in relationship to the saxophone and put them in the same oral space and have them vibrant and have them alive. And thank you, Mark Helias, for helping us bring this music to people in a way that feels very alive. That's the best word I can use, alive. It feels very alive.
Where is he today? Why isn't he here?
What's Mark up to? I think he was playing out in Brooklyn last night, he said.
Oh, okay. So Allison Miller, not to be confused with the actress.
Thank you.
Not that that's a good...
It happens often.
Currently, you lead Boom Tick Boom, and you're also part of the group Artemis.
That's right.
As a young drum student, how did you learn to play with melodic instruments? Or do we make the mistake of not perceiving the drum set as melodic?
Well, I think both questions or both sides of the question are correct or valid. I do think we make the mistake of thinking that drums are not a melodic instrument. And as a young drum student, I will say that I primarily teach melodies on the drums as a teacher to young drum students. To me, you know, having a strong grasp of melodic content and understanding what makes a great melody actually makes it so much easier to be a drummer. And I kind of owe all of that to my mom, because my mom was she's a musician. She was the church choir director at the church I was talking about earlier. I didn't know I was going to talk about church so much today. I guess it's because it's Sunday. But my mom, you know, one of the reasons I was so involved in my church is because my mom was the choir director. So I just was always at church hanging out while she was directing and practicing and stuff. So, but she really made me and my sisters sing trios at church from a very young age. So I started singing with both my sisters when I was probably 4 or so in church for the congregation. And then she also made me learn piano before she would let me start drumming. So I think that really had an influence on me, because I always just heard melody. I never heard actual drum parts. I just heard melody when I was learning. And then when I got older, I think another thing that contributed to that was that I went to college, but I studied classical percussion. I didn't study jazz drumming. And I spent a good 2 or 3 years primarily focusing on marimba. And I think that had a huge effect on me, and the fact that I compose as well and write. So I think it's the piano playing and the marimba playing. And so I do think the drums are very melodic. And on the other side of it, what was the first question?
How you learn to play with melodic instruments.
Oh, yeah. Well, you just have to play with musicians as much as possible. I mean, I'll give you an example. I teach at the New School. We just started back up in person, you know, and I'm feeling for these poor students that were stuck online all last year, especially the freshmen who really never, you know, it's such an important year in social development, that first year of college and living on your own and things like that. So I teach a ensemble called Super Trios, and we had our first rehearsal, and it was proof that none of this, you cannot learn this music in a room by yourself. Because these poor students did not know any of the innate cues you learn when you play jazz with other people. It all slipped away. Like basic things. Like when the bass player does this, you know, as a drummer, you do this, you know, and the hookups, it was like no one even knew how to count off a tune, you know, and ending a tune was a complete mystery. And it was really like I was like, oh, there's proof to this. You know, this music is a community music. It's not something you do by yourself. So I would say for young drummers to not just practice in a practice room by themselves, but to practice with other people as much as possible. And when I was a student, or actually when I had just moved to New York, I lived with a tenor player, and he and I just practiced together. That's what we did. I'd be practicing my exercises or whatever I was working on, and I would always be playing with a metronome, and he would use me as a metronome. So even if we weren't consciously trying to be in musical conversation with each other, we were, because we were right there together playing. So I encourage young players to play with melodic instruments as much as possible.
Cheryl, check this out. This is a fascinating synchronicity. We're learning this because we're doing these interviews with you. From the melodic input to Allison's life as a percussionist drummer, when I started my musical journey, I wanted to play the drums. I studied drumming. I was in elementary school, made it through about junior high school in marching band. And oh, I can't tell you, Allison, how much I wanted to learn how to play the drum set. But, you know, in my era, there was nobody that was going to teach me, you know.
Right.
But anyway, so from that primal connection to loving the drums comes this melodic player, right, on the saxophone.
Yeah.
So there's drum and rhythm and love of rhythm inside me in a very innate place that also plays out in connection when I hear Allison's playing. So as much as Allison is thinking melody, I'm thinking rhythm. So what a synchrony of musical forces here.
Yeah, it's like it has come full circle for you, Jane.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Also, it's as her musical partner, it's very clear as a drummer that she is very tied into rhythm. And I'm grateful for it. It's so great.
Well, you know, there's a long history of the jazz players who have related to the kinesthetic approach to the saxophone, what it feels like to flow, motion and flow in with certain rhythmic feeling. And especially, you know, when you're just a drum and a saxophone and there's no harmonic instruments, when Allison speaks about the freedom to go to places she never imagined going, and from a saxophonistic perspective, I was able to create harmony and melody wherever my imagination took it, from whatever was compelled by things I would be hearing from Allison. So it was incredibly freeing from my part as well, too. It's a real, real exciting duet format.
I give the last word to my guests. So if there's a question I didn't ask and you'd like to answer, or some upcoming projects, something you'd like us as listeners to know.
Well, I haven't gotten in the studio yet, but it's coming in the spring. I've had a project that I've had to put on hold called Picturing the Invisible, compositions inspired by this rather legendary science photographer by the name of Berenice Abbott. And I've written a bunch of compositions that I want to play with very special improvisers, and Allison is one of them. In small duet trio formats to play these pieces, different artists, and to record them in high definition surround sound. So as soon as it's safe and comfortable, I just got my third Moderna jab this week. So let's all hope things are getting better. All right.
For me, well, I'm still very excited about our release that we put out Tuesdays. And I basically, when there was a window of after I was vaccinated and felt before it got scary again and was feeling a little sense of freedom, I have crammed in a bunch of records and some other records for other people, but three other records of mine specifically that are all recorded. Well, two of them are recorded. One is a duo record with really great pianist Carmen Stoff. She and I have a long musical relationship. And then another record, a new band I just formed about 7 months ago with actually a former student of mine and Jane's, fabulous young bassist, Nick Dunstan. I just love him so much. He's an incredible person and musician. And so I heard this young guitarist named Wendy Eisenberg. We played together back in February. And I fell in love with their playing. And I get these visions where I'm like, this is a new band. And I thought Wendy and Nick. And so I spent kind of like Jane and I were doing, getting together once a week. I kind of got together once every two or three weeks with Wendy. And we played, because Nick lives in Berlin. So we played improv duos. I recorded them all. And then I kind of wrote pieces of music from those improvs. And we just recorded last month. So that's really exciting for me. And then I have a Boom Tick Boom project that I'm finally going to record in December that is a suite of music called Rivers in Our Veins that I wrote for five specific East Coast rivers and kind of celebrating their bio and cultural diversity. And that piece was premiered right before the pandemic hit. So I'm finally getting a chance to record it in December. So I'm excited about that.
For more information on Jane Ira Bloom, janeirabloom.com. And for more information on Allison Miller, allisonmiller.com. And now for some music. Thank you.
De frente me zumbo, yo solo me alumbro, entiendes, soy otro cambumbo. Me compongo cuando me derrumbo, cojo aire y vuelvo, me hundo. Enfrento mi rumbo en el que retumbo, pa' mente pequeño y sonido yumbo. De Villa Locura a las calles de Bourbon, en mi candungo, corriendo el mundo. En alta y baja, fuera de la caja, siempre palanca, puesto a mi baraja. Un palo de caña, de piña por laja, siempre rodeo de los más que trabajan. De tripas corazones, acá se fajan, el menos que tiene te da su migaja. Si no aprieta, nadie se relaja, cerramos los ojos, todo encaja. Siempre acusa buscando la manera, machete forjando mi carretera. No me doblaba ante una billetera, manodilla frente a mi santa abuela. Buscando la rabia en la esquina rumbera, buscando la paz por toda la cordillera. Buscando pela para tumbar la frontera, buscando la vida por toda la esfera. Buscaba guayaba como Rubén, buscaba América yo también. La prensa con sueño por RD, la copa del mundo como Mbappé. Nunca una copia que va a fallecer, siempre original, quiero trascender. Peña con la gasa, Westside represent.
A selection from guitarist and oud player Gordon Gradina's third solo release, Klotzky, on his new label, Attaboy Girl Records. We listen to Joyride. The release is out tomorrow. And from Grammy-winning Puerto Rican drummer, composer, and arranger Henry Cole and his ensemble Villa Locora. Their latest release, due out on November 19th, is titled Buscando la Vida, and was commissioned by Chamber Music America's New Jazz Works. The piece, De Frente, featuring Negro Gonzalez, is, quote, a meditation on confronting and taking responsibility for one's life, including all its positive and negative qualities.
Oops.
listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview today is with Montreal, Canadian-based bassist and composer Levi Dover. His debut sextet release is Imaginary Structures and is available now on Three Pines Records. So, thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes. So, who's in the band and where did you find them for this recording?
Yeah, well, I'll just introduce you to the different members. So there's a great trumpet player by the name of Lex French, an alto saxophonist, Eric Hove. Then we have a Olivier Salazar, who's a vibraphonist, Andrew Boudreau on piano, Kyle Hutchins on drums, and myself, Levi Dover, and I'm playing double bass and of course wrote all the music. So these are all musicians that at least at some point were living in Montreal, Quebec, where I'm from. And we sort of crossed paths mostly while I was studying music at McGill University here. Some of the musicians are also from Montreal, and then some of them are sort of from all over the place. So Lex is originally from New Zealand. Andrew is from Nova Scotia in the eastern part of Canada, and now he's living in Brooklyn, New York. Kyle is from upstate New York. I don't remember what town, but I guess that's your area.
That's my neck of the woods, somewhere yeah. Up here.
I can't remember what town he's from now. In any case, and then Eric Hove is from Western Canada, and he's been living in Montreal for a while. And Olivier Salazar is from Montreal as well. So we kind of all met, we played together in different situations. And when I was putting together this project, I sort of just kind of meditated for a while on the sound that I was hearing. And I sort of just gravitated towards these people. And I felt like this was going to be the right formula to kind of achieve the sound I was looking for.
What led you to debut with Three Pines Records?
Well, Three Pines is really interesting, mainly because I find these days, you know, there's this huge shift taking place in the music industry, of course, with everything transitioning to streaming, to just the digital world in general. And I think a lot of labels that are established and have been around for a long time, while a lot of them are great, some of them are still functioning on an older model that relies a lot on physical distribution and sometimes even on sort of owning the masters of the music from musicians, which used to make more sense when there was, you know, lots of physical sales and sort of lots of money to be made from selling an album. These days, the model has changed so much, and I was really interested in working with people who kind of understood the new landscape in music. And on top of that, working with people who really understood the landscape in, let's say, jazz music and improvised music, which again is also very different. It's much more niche, and they're, you know, they really understand what that market is like, and that it's not so much about, you know, trying to get, you know, 10 million listeners. It's much more about trying to go after an audience that's going to connect with your music. So Three Pines just really appealed to me. We had a few mutual connections, people in common that we knew And it just when I spoke to Oded, who's mostly running Three Pines Records, we just kind of clicked and had a similar vision about how we wanted to do things.
And one of the other co-founders is Ernesto Cervini, yeah, who runs Orange Grove Publicity.
Yes.
And the other third is Amy Cervini.
That's right.
The vocalist. Levi, I'd like to read you something.
Sure.
It is only through the lens of the imagination that we construct the world around us and give it meaning. The real is without intention or significance, appearing as a collage of seemingly unrelated elements. But as we weave together our perceptions, we create an inner world populated by emotions, stories, dreams, remembered pasts, and projected futures. These are the imaginary structures in which we live. Who wrote that, Levi?
Well, that's a short text that I composed. And for me, it was kind of important. Well, I'll preface this by saying titles are tricky, you know, titles of, I would say, all artwork in general, because especially when we're talking about instrumental music, I find it's a similar thing when I go to a museum or when I'm looking at visual art and I see an artist's, when an artist has titled their work, sometimes it's really helpful in that it gives a perspective from which to come at the work. And for me, when I came up with the title of the album, I think I wanted to give a little bit more to the listener, or to anyone who was interested in it, to try and frame what I was getting at. So when I wrote that text, it was sort of a reflection on some of the themes I had been thinking about pondering when I wrote the music and when I titled the music. And just to comment on, let's say, existence, or sort of a little philosophical nugget that I wanted to kind of dive into.
So are you implying that these imaginary structures are necessary to exist in contemporary times?
Absolutely. And I think what I'll give some credit where it's due. This is sort of an idea that I kind of gleaned from one kind of great thinker and author in particular, which is Jean-Paul Sartre, who's a French writer and philosopher. And he talks about a lot about the imaginary, and that's the word he always uses specifically, not the imagination, but like the imaginary, and how everything we experience, sort of how I sort of rephrased it, is something that we create internally, you know. And for me, that was a really important idea, and I think it became even maybe more important over the last year and a half, or the last 2 years, or however long it's been during the pandemic, and spending more time alone and trying to be in a place of hopefulness and looking forwards and trying to see the positive. And for me, a lot of this period has been reflecting on what's really important to me. And a lot of that is relationships with other people, the people I love, my friends, my family, my community, and realizing that this is the stuff that really gives existence its meaning. And so when I titled the album Imaginary Structures, the structures that I'm playing, I think, are not, of course, physical structures, but the structures that organize our lives and that make us, ideally lead meaningful lives.
Different from The Matrix, and I'm talking about the movie, where the construct is built for us to contain us.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah, different idea, but I think, it's funny to talk about that movie, but I think that's maybe touches on some similar themes as well, on that things, reality and existence, it's all very fleeting. It's not as concrete, I think, as we think it is. And so I find it's very important to look inwards and try and find, an internal sense of meaning, because the world can be really tricky sometimes to navigate.
Don't I know it?
Yeah. Thank you.
that one of the release's influences was pianist Andrew Hill.
Yes.
What is it about him that you appreciate as a composer?
Oh, well, I could talk so much about Andrew Hill. Andrew Hill was someone I discovered maybe later on in my experience with this music. And there's something about his composing and his piano playing that just struck a chord. And I think it's this sort of willingness to adventure into like unknown territory and really commit to a unique sound. And that's something that Andrew Hill, he's not the only one, you know, he kind of comes from what I think are a lineage of musicians from that, especially from that era, but and ongoing, who are kind of aren't afraid to just commit wholeheartedly to their own vision of music. And Andrew Hill's compositions are just unbelievably special. I mean, in my, maybe this is just my opinion, but I, you know, I really, when I listen to Andrew Hill, I hear him really coming a lot out of Thelonious Monk in a way, but with something much more contemporary. Thelonious Monk, a bit of kind of Herbie Hancock, and there's sort of this lineage of these musicians who, it seems to me anyway, that their purpose was really to find their identity through music and establish really a new vision of expression in music.
All right, Levi, I like to leave the last word to my guest. So this is your opportunity to say something about an upcoming gig or project, answer a question that I didn't ask.
Sure. Well, I'd maybe like just to invite, you know, any listener who's interested to go follow me online. You can check out my album Imaginary Structures. That's going to, you know, it's on all digital platforms. I also really encourage people to, if possible, if it's within your means, to go on Bandcamp, which is a great platform that supports artists directly. So you can buy a physical copy there. There's some like I'm really happy with the physical album that we printed. It looks beautiful. There's some amazing artwork on there. And so I'm kind of wholeheartedly encouraging people to do that if they can, especially in this day and age with music. As far as concerts go, we actually just had an album release concert now 2 weeks ago as part of this great festival in Montreal, the Off Jazz Fest. And for now we're organizing sort of some tours, some stuff happening likely in the spring and summer of this year. Unfortunately, so far nothing south of the border, nothing in the United States. It's a very tricky prospect for Canadian musicians to get down there in terms of visas and stuff. It's really a headache. It's like easier to go overseas, or you know, than it is to go to the States. But that's another that's another question. So I'll just leave you with that, an invitation that if you like what you hear, if you like the music, go dig a little bit further. There's also lots of great groups that I play in as well. That's sort of what I've done a lot of up until now. So this is my first release as leader, but I've been playing bass in different groups for more than 10 years in Montreal now. One such group that I'll just give a quick shout out to is the Jean-Sian MG Trio. So she's a fantastic pianist. We've been playing together for years. We've recorded now two albums, and we're going to be recording a third album this year. And so I invite anyone who's interested in my music, if they're looking for something in a similar vein, let's say, to go and check out Jean-Sian MG online. There's some great music there as well.
For more information on Levi Dover, levidover.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.